Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you for joining me today. I appreciate it, and I hope all is well in your world. This is the second last episode of 2020. And I'm going to go out on a limb and say that it's good. It's a good one. I really, really thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. And I think that you're going to enjoy it just as much as I did. So let's just jump straight into it. My guest's career started back in the late 1990s. He was living in Australia and he wanted to pursue his dream of working in Hollywood. So with no real plan, and even up until that point, he had never left his country. But he took the leap and he flew to live in Los Angeles. Well, it worked. Today, he is mainly a VFX supervisor and an FX technical director in Hollywood. And some of the more recent projects that he's worked on include Transformers 3, The Equalizer, Star Trek, and The Last Airbender, just to name a few. But early on in his career, he also began creating video tutorials to help other people learn visual effects. And eventually, he began selling these products and services. And to date, he has sold hundreds of thousands of dollars in products and services, both digital and hard copy DVD. Now, let's hack Alan McKay. With the holiday season quickly approaching, as you stock up on stocking stuffers for family and friends, don't forget to treat yourself as well and to take a chance on that idea for a business or side hustle that you want to take from part-time to full-time. Today's episode is sponsored by Teachable. And whether you have an offline business that you'd like to bring online or have a niche or passion that you'd like to teach others, Teachable is here to help. Teachable is a platform that enables independent entrepreneurs and creators to build and sell fully customizable online courses and services. Join over 100,000 instructors who have transformed their knowledge into world-class courses and have earned more than $500 million to date. To help you get started, and as a special offer for you as a listener, visit teachable.com/hack and enter hack for 50% off your first 3 months on Teachable today. Again, that's teachable.com/hack and enter the code hack for 50% off your first 3 months on Teachable today. An independent report showed that last year alone, false declines cost U.S. businesses over $15 billion. False declines. They're what happens when an online purchase made using a valid card is declined when it should have been accepted. That's why if your business takes payments online, you need a unique payment solution that provides you with the granular data and helps you to better optimize your payments. In short, you need Checkout.com. Checkout.com's modular online payment solution is the ideal payment solution for e-commerce businesses of all sizes. Checkout.com's end-to-end payment platform simplifies payment process. There's no one-size-fits-all approach when it comes to constructing the perfect payment funnel for your business, but Checkout.com has businesses of all sizes covered. Plus, Checkout.com gives you insights so you can optimize your customer experience and get more out of every transaction. And you can gain a granular understanding of how cash flows in and out of your business so that you can make the changes you need. Learn more at checkout.com/hack. You can download their free white paper report and learn how you can generate more growth through their payment platform. Their white paper report has a ton of great information and stats that will show you how the future of payment solutions is strategic and for scale. That's checkout.com/hack. Download their free report. And we are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today, I have a very special guest. Alan, welcome to the show.
Hey, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. It's absolutely my pleasure to have you on the show. I've been looking forward to this. So let's just jump into it. Alan, let's start here. Can you tell me, what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your success so far?
I'd say personal brand. I've been thinking a lot about this lately, but just kind of looking back at a lot of my history in a lot of different areas, it's always been really the thing that's going to make you resonate above everyone else. So when there is a lot of competition, most people are shy to that. They think, well, I can never get into that industry, it's too saturated. But it's always that a industry that's saturated just makes it more proven. But it's usually your brand, your messaging, that's going to make you resonate and stand out from all the other noise.
Did you start a personal brand before you were aware of what a personal brand was?
Yeah, and that's exactly it. Like kind of looking back on my career, it's like, yeah, okay, I can see the kind of patterns and a lot of what I've been doing earlier on. Even like I'm originally from Australia, but moving to the US, I won't get ahead of myself here, but moving to the US to work in film, that was one of those things that I realized now looking back that the film industry in Australia was a lot smaller. So you think less competition, more opportunity. But what I realized after moving to LA, to Hollywood, was that there was way more opportunity. And it was just more about figuring out how to resonate and stand out against everyone else. So yeah, it's definitely been a pattern of this that I've kind of looked back and realized, oh, that makes total sense why I've gotten success in this pocket or that pocket.
So when you originally moved, I just want to touch on this, from Australia, about 20 years ago, right? You wanted to work in the film industry. You were in a country that didn't have a huge film industry, and obviously Hollywood is the place to go. Did you understand, or did you believe at that time that even though I can be a bigger fish in a smaller pond here in Australia, over there, even if I'm a small fish, it's still such a huge pond that I can be massively successful?
That's exactly it. So I kind of humbly figured I'd be a medium-sized fish in a very small pond in Australia. But going to the US, I always expected in Hollywood to be a tiny fish in the biggest pond on the planet. And that was the one thing that kind of surprised me, is when I got over there, suddenly there was speaking opportunities. I was getting offered to work on my favorite films with all my favorite directors. And suddenly I realized, like, holy crap, like there's so much opportunity over here that I was really surprised by. And looking back, it was more because I had kind of built up a presence online earlier on by training and doing talks, demonstrating a lot of the work I've been doing. So when I went to the US expecting to be pretty much invisible to everyone, that's where the market was. That's where the industry was. So instead of it being this massive place, like it was essentially a massive industry where everyone is a lot more familiar with me than it would be in my smaller city where there's not as many people. So that I'll just say is like what kind of surprised me is that if anything, you're kind of moving into a place that's going to embrace you and they all speak the same language. They're all excited about what you or everyone else is doing. And so as long as you are proactive in actually getting your voice heard, then you're going to resonate a lot more than you would be in a smaller place with less competition, but less people living and breathing that same industry.
I agree. So the personal brand side of it, whether like you didn't know that that's what it was necessarily, but did the creation of content, the creation of tutorials and things that you did way earlier on, did any of that play a part in your success in your career?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's one of those things that for me, let's say I'm walking through a room and I see someone who's done some great work, I'd always be very encouraging. So I'd say like, that's so great. How do you do that? Just more, if anything, saying something complimentary. But I was always kind of shocked how people would be very protective. Like, I'm not telling you my one secret. That always surprised me a little bit. But it meant that for me, especially early in my career, I was doing something that was fairly new. Like visual effects, CGI was still like Toy Story had just come out. So there weren't that many people doing this stuff. So there were a lot of unknowns. And it meant that for me, I was always fascinated with figuring out how do you do whatever, simulate fire, create a photoreal human being, whatever it might be. And because of that, I always wanted to share it so that way others wouldn't have to go down that path. Now, the thing is that there's going to be a lot of people, especially new technology or new ways of doing things, everyone's going to want to hear about the latest and greatest stuff. So by getting in early, it really ends up positioning you as the authority because you're the one who's saying, hey, I just figured this out. Hey, I just touched on this thing over here. Let me show you how I spent 3 weeks to figure this out so you can do it in 3 hours. And the more that I was able to do that, it meant that you're becoming front of mind for that pain point that a lot of people have. So whenever they think of, oh man, we need to do this big complicated shot for this film, what if we got that person who's been posting everywhere, showing off all this stuff? So in a lot of ways, it's just natural progression. You're doing something, you're showing the answers to it. The more the people are going to look to you like, well, could you do that for us? So yeah, it's definitely played a huge part for sure.
You were content marketing before content marketing as a term became something.
Yeah, I think even when you have like an old FTP folder, you're just posting your work to like essentially like a Dropbox dump folder that you might get a very small amount of people go to, but if they're in love with what you do as well, like before social media or anything else, they're going to be like, oh, has Alan posted anything new today? And you'd be doing the same thing. It's just essentially a smaller pool of people because it's not, you don't have any algorithm kind of boosting your stuff. But if people stumble across each other, then you kind of become obsessed or intrigued or excited with what other people are doing. And I think that's really cool because it kind of motivates everyone, inspires everyone when you're seeing what others are doing and you get ideas yourself and want to go off and try different things too. And now, of course, like with the internet, it kind of has exponentially amplified that. And now we get that every direction we look. But if anything, it means that it's more of a chance to kind of look at what the rest of the industry is doing, whether it's your competitors, whether it is people who are inspiring you. And that's something that you can look at and be like, oh, well, what if I tried that myself? Or I'd put my own little spin on it.
Right, right. I love it. And I like the clarification on it because I think, well, especially now, 2020, and online education and people training courses, it's massive, right? It's a huge, mm-hmm. huge industry and people yeah. are normalized to it, which is good. But it's, we hear about personal branding, we hear about content, putting it out there only in order to, like, we hear it from people who are creating the courses, but there's this other side that you can utilize that stuff literally just to build up the career that you want in any field by just putting that stuff out there that really is just, it's like a resume that's like more interactive or more engaging or more like just actually shows.
It's a resume, but it's also lead gen. So it's essentially a way to put your work out there and attract the right people. And especially if it is, let's just say like artwork or images or video, we're visual people. And the thing is too, it's also lead gen in the sense that people, the more that they see your stuff, the more they become familiar with you. And we can only have space in our head for associating one person to one thing. So whatever that thing is that you want to position yourself around, the more touches you have, it's kind of going back to like, if you pivot the sales for a second, like 7 touches to get a prospect to convert, like that sort of approach is like the more touches you're giving someone, the more that they're going to start to replace whoever they had in their head, Coca-Cola for soda or whatever it might be, with you for that pain point. And that way, after a while, it's like, oh, you need someone. I saw this person online. He does really great stuff, or she does really awesome work. And you eventually become the mascot, the person, the brand that they think of when they think of that topic. So the more touches, the more that you'll resonate over everyone else.
Exactly, exactly. And it doesn't have to be just because somebody lets you work on a film and now that can get added to your resume, or somebody lets right. you, it can be anything. You can just go out and do it yourself, and you can also share it around the entire world at this point instantly on social media.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really surprised when you look at a lot of people who have blown up on social. It's either been that they were an innovator, or an early adopter, I should say, that they got in early and started, you know, hammering something hard, or they just did it louder than everyone else. Like, there's that kind of rule, which is the person with the loudest voice and the biggest following will always win. And that's exactly it. Like, your resume and your credentials are important, but a lot of the time what I'm really surprised by is that when you're captivated by someone, you're not really going through their job history necessarily and looking at their credentials. Because I'd love to stand by 25 years experience, Emmy Award, and all these other things, but there's people who are doing what I do in terms of like the social space way better, way louder, way more successful than me with millions of followers. And they have got zero experience, zero credentials, but they do it really well. So I think that it just kind of comes down to like what you want to lean on and how you want to captivate them.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, this conversation in general wouldn't have taken place if I hadn't just decided to start and you hadn't just decided to start. And it's, I didn't have an audience at all when I started this. Literally nobody just started it and it just went from there. But I did get in early in that sense 5 years ago, but it is sort of that thing. And this leads me to me, it's like, it is mindset to a certain degree, right? Like 20 years ago, you moved from Australia to the biggest market, like you said, in the world, and from a small country, like a small, humble country like Canada. Like, we're not aggressive like Hollywood. It takes a certain way of thinking or a certain mentality to be willing to do that in the face of defeat that really does lie there a lot of times. And lots of people will tell you to not even do that because it's not going to work. Mm-hmm. Is this something that you were like, sort of like, is innate within you to be able to do that? Or did you just like, whatever, freaked out and just did it anyways?
I like to think of everyone, like whether we're using Instagram or more of an offline approach, like I think everyone's either inspired or intimidated. Like there's someone I knew once who the story went that he was at a party and he was trying to get everyone's attention because he kind of had that persona of he had to be the center of attention. And then someone who no one had seen for many years just came back from Brazil. And so everyone flocked over to the other person. He got really intimidated. Like, I should be the center of attention. And that to me is kind of like, I've always kind of thought of that sort of story where for me, like if someone is better than you or more successful or whatever, you can either be intimidated by them or threatened by them, or you can be inspired by them. And it's the same way that you go on Instagram, whether it is looking at people's artwork or whether it is looking at so-and-so's got a better body or, you know, they've got 8-pack abs and I'm going to get 6-pack or whatever it might be. But however it is that you compare yourself to them, that you're either intimidated or inspired. And now you want 9-pack abs, you know, that'd be a healthy response, kind of. But that's just kind of like how I've always seen things, is that you can either get intimidated or scared, or you can get inspired. And for me, that was always it. Like, I think that there's a very common story for most artists that you don't have a lot of support. When you decide to go down the path of being an artist, you got your parents, everyone around you saying, give up, go back to school, art's not a career, all these sorts of things. And that's such a common kind of script that we all hear. And the sad part is a lot of people will listen to that. Eventually it'll weigh on them. And I think for me, it was just kind of like, okay, I just got to internalize like what my goals are and go after them. And I'll just let the results speak for themselves. So rather than kind of letting other people kind of feed into my insecurities, is just more, okay, keep my head down. I know what I want. And I know it sounds impossible, especially let's just say in the 90s, when to me, Hollywood was a place on TV. It wasn't a real place. Like the world's so small now. I can be back in Australia in 12 hours. I can, minus the pandemic, but anywhere in the world I want to be, I can get there pretty quick. The world is so tiny now compared to how it was then. But at the time, I'd never been on a plane or anything. So it's a different world altogether.
You hadn't even been on a plane at that point. Jesus.
I think 17 was the first time I ever hopped on a plane. So yeah, it's like around that time, but I'd never been outside the country until I moved to the US the first time. So crazy world.
So at that jumping off,
I was quickly mentioned COVID days. So I have a cat in here somewhere that may or may not jump on my desk. If you hear some weird noises.
All right. That's cool. At that jumping off point then, Alan, not to say you weren't intimidated, because you probably were to some sense, but you were inspired. Were you specifically inspired by one person at that point?
No, I think at the time there weren't. It was more, I set some like very lofty goals when I was like 14. And I think that the big difference was that I kind of said like, okay, here I am, here's Hollywood. That sounds absolutely insane. But what if I were to break it down enough times till it actually seemed, rather than being impossible, possible, but just a lot of work to do. So I think it was more about just building a strategy around it. And once I did that, it kind of just made me realize, holy crap, I can do this. It's just going to be a lot of work. So there weren't really too many people at the time that I was specifically like modeling myself after or anything like that. I think especially just my industry, it was so young still that there weren't really a lot of people that even knew what, like, let's say visual effects was or things like that. So it was just harder to kind of find people to be like, holy crap, you do what I do. I want to be like you. And, you know, I regret that though. I think that if I did have those kind of future mentors or people I can model their success, it would be a lot more inspirational and give me a bit of a clearer path as well.
That's the thing. It's a hell of a lot easier when we have that path to follow, because the mistakes or the things they do right, you can kind of like, they've done it for you, but you didn't have that. So when did the transition become from putting out content or tutorials to like better your career and get more work that way to actually starting that business of actually helping other people do it?
So I think for me, two things. Like, one is that I kind of looked at a lot of my success and I realized that the metrics that I was really looking at for success was more career related, or soft skills, not hard skills. And what's always kind of frustrated me is that in the industry I'm in, everyone just kind of thinks, I just got to learn the software better. I've got to go and learn the latest thing or the latest feature or get the new version, and then everything will make sense. And the problem is that they're not getting any real growth or headway by doing that. And it's because they're kind of focused on the wrong metrics. So that became clear to me that a lot of people need to either focus on their brand, learn negotiating, really figure out their goals, like just have a clear path, realize that they're in a business, that most artists are, you know, they think that business is an evil word and they don't want to be the man. They're going to let their art speak for themselves. So they're really kind of neglecting a lot of areas that they need to focus on. So that just kind of made me realize that doesn't matter how good you get at pressing the buttons, it's not going to make you a better leader. It's not going to make you a better artist. It's really just the service you're providing, not the rest of the business you should be focused on. And at the same time, like, I'd actually been doing training like since like the 90s, like 97, I think I started putting out free tutorials. I sold my first training DVD when I was in 2004, I think. And it's kind of funny because I looked back at all this. I went through, I think, 10 years of like looking at all the sales that I tracked on PayPal. There's the cat again. And the interesting thing about all this is that I realized that over that 10 years, I had made about 80 grand. So this was me putting up a training DVD saying, here it is for sale, come get it. And really not thinking about the marketing side of things. And I think it was 2014 that I decided I'm going to make a course. And that's where I'm going to apply some of the marketing that I've been learning and really just go all in and try and do this properly rather than like, here's a thing I threw up on the internet, come grab it. And it was really interesting because I think just having a better approach to it and really putting a lot of strategy behind it, that kind of changed everything. Because I think the course I made, it was teaching artists how to program, which I only put up for 2 weeks. And I felt like I didn't make the recordings weren't as consistent as I wanted. So I kind of put it up and then I took it back down again, which is kind of silly. But during that time, though, in the 2 weeks, it made $100,000. It was 80 grand in 1 week and then 20 grand the next week. And it was mainly because I'd only done like a 1 week launch. And then I'm like, why would I close the cart? Like, that sounds crazy. Like, why am I going to turn off money? So I end up waiting an extra week and then be like, okay, I better shut this down. So that was kind of like my first time of really ever launching something. And again, like listening to the John Reese's and other people who are having $1 million days, like to me, I was thinking like, that's not very good. Like, you know, it's good. Money's great. But when you're comparing yourself to other people who've had a lot of success, you suddenly think like, oh, okay, I'm doing all right. And it wasn't until later on when I had a lot more success in that area that I started realizing like, okay, like that's actually not that common. This is actually really good results, not like average or below average results. So it's a bit of a turning point. But that was the main thing is like, I look back at like putting out so much content and being happy to put out for free, but then putting out some paid stuff as well. But realizing like, if you're not really showing that you believe in the product and really putting the work into making people understand how it's going to benefit them, then it doesn't matter how great the product is, it's just not going to sell. And so looking at the 5, 6, 7 products I'd made over 10 years, making 80 grand and then making that in a single week, it was pretty much night and day. It made me realize like, okay, like there's a different way to doing this that I've been doing it wrong this whole time.
Fair enough. And I think, I mean, I'll probably run into those sort of intersections all the way through the rest of your career and life, that there's, you did it and it got you this far, but there are better ways to do things. For learning once you realized that you wanted to learn sort of the marketing side, you mentioned like John Reese, those people, and launching things, even just creating like training materials. How did you go about like learning these things yourself?
Good question. I think it's just obsession, like really liking something and wanting to figure out how it works. Like I think I figured out fairly early into my life that I liked problem solving. And so for me, I always saw all this as problem solving, but really it's just like, okay, this seems valuable. It seems like it's going to be some big thing that's going to, what we would use these days as trend. So this sort of technology or this software or this feature or whatever it might be, this seems like it's going to do really well. So I would just start to kind of tinker around and play with it just to try and see like, okay, like, is this something that resonates? What can I do with it? And again, it's going back to content. The more that you're messing with something, it doesn't need to be perfect quality. You can still just show other people. It's gaining interest that way. But for me, I always looked at it like, okay, go and figure something out, go share those results with other people. You don't need to charge money for it. You know, I put out most of my stuff for free, but that would just be a way that would kind of start a conversation with a lot of people. And it would just be fun because that way I'm leading towards like, I'm going to make something and show off what I can do with it. But ultimately, I think it's just more being curious and messing around with something, seeing the potential in it, how it could benefit other people. That's when you want to connect the dots. Because I think a lot of other people, it's usually not knowing how to start something or not knowing how it's going to benefit them. So when you're able to kind of point that stuff out, then it's like, oh yeah, I could use this in my life to make things better. Yeah. So I think it's just been more curiosity.
Okay. And now I'm curious about this. So let's make it into quote unquote projects. But looking through your site, through some of the things I've read about you, 20 plus, I believe, like trainings at this point, you mentioned DVDs, mentorship, just it's a pile of stuff that you've created and you continue to create, obviously, over the decades. So right now, maybe in normal times, if that affects this. But with all of the ideas out there, all the things you learn and you're inspired by, all the things that you want to do, all the opportunities that come to you, how do you decide, Alan, that a project is worth your time, energy, and resources?
So in terms of like film projects, things like that, or more training?
Well, there's only one of you. So How do you decide what you're going to spend this time on? And that's true. Yeah. You have this double-sided career, which is really cool. So how do you decide what is worth your time?
Yeah. And I think that's like a really great question, because I think that's something that I'm always fascinated asking other people too, who are pretty successful, just because I know for them, it isn't like, how do I feed myself this week? It's usually going to be that you have infinite opportunity, and it's really about what opportunity cost is there with this, this, and this. So in other words, if I were to do this thing, what other things am I missing out on? So I think that when it comes to working on movies, it's more the relationship, or if it's something that intrigues me, but usually it's like, hey, this director, I really like him or her, or I've worked with them before, and I think this would be a lot of fun. But when it comes to training or anything else, it's usually more big picture, knowing that, you know, I can only do a certain amount of stuff per year. I'm more looking at like what either there's a hole in a market that I want to fill, or I want to jump on something that I think is going to take off and position myself as kind of like, I've occupied this circle. Here's all the training and everything else for that. So that's something I've done a lot in the past, which is like, if something came along that I thought was a unique opportunity, I'd get obsessed with it, but also know that being an early adopter, it means that you get to put your thumbprint on it before anyone else. So that's kind of been more my strategy a lot of the time. And yeah, I think it just kind of comes down to ultimately, like, what are the things I think are going to, like, this sounds hokey, but what are going to benefit the customer, user, person struggling with that thing the most? Like I said, it's just mainly for me knowing that everyone kind of follows those shiny objects of, I got to learn the software and that. For me, I kind of see that as being one of my big goals for the next few decades, has really been kind of eliminate that whole starving artist mentality, that artists shouldn't suffer, that artists can't get paid what they deserve, like all these sorts of things. So because of that, it means that I really want to equip people with the right skills to kind of get them to avoid the struggles that they've been kind of having to deal with. And so that ends up being, well, what what's the best solution to their problem, whether it is branding or whether it is to understand business more. So that way they can start to negotiate their worth and understand their value and see how the big machine works that they're playing their part in. So that's kind of, for me, always been more like looking at the big picture. It's more about helping solve people's problems, and maybe it's clearer to me what they need than it is for them. So looking at, okay, these are the three products that I think, or courses that are really going to transform someone's kind of lifestyle from the struggling artist to being someone who has gets the career success that they want. That's where I'm putting a lot of my focus into trying to solve their problem, but also help it resonate for them. So I know it's a bit of a long-winded answer, but that's kind of more right now how I'm immediately kind of picking and choosing things is more to do with solving that bigger problem that kind of keeps me focused at the moment.
Yeah, it's a great answer. And I'm assuming, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, again, 2020, the world has been greatly impacted. The film industry is one of those industries, like travel and stuff, that has been vastly impacted. Was it something that you just now, rather than so many people in your industry that just like are just sitting waiting for it to hopefully start again, you were just like, oh, cool, I got all this time to go do this side of my career. And I don't even have to it's easier to make the decision because you don't have to maybe turn down something else. It's like, well, that's on hold, so let's do this.
Yeah. Initially, when this all happened, like I'd already been working from home for a long time, so it wasn't new to me. And I liked the idea that now all my friends at Facebook and Twitter, everywhere, were starting to work from home as well. So I just kind of felt like this is going to be a unique opportunity where, especially for artists who move to London, Montreal, Vancouver, LA, New York, Toronto, any big film city, that they're usually moving to an expensive city because that's where the work is. And now suddenly it doesn't matter where you are because we're all online. So that kind of intrigued me, knowing that this kind of even the playing field a little bit for artists, that they can now work from home. It means that anyone in any country, in any city in the world, is able to compete on work. The thing is that for them to do that successfully, they're going to need to know how to brand themselves and market themselves. So that became pretty clear to me earlier on that during this time, I wanted to look at this as a way to buckle down, work on a branding course, which sounds so obvious looking back at my career and a lot of what I went to, but I knew that that's what a lot of other people would need to learn to do, is to compete with now the billions of people on the planet rather than just their little clique in their city. They're going to need to understand the market, understand their clients, understand how to position themselves and their messaging in that market to resonate. So yeah, as soon as this happened, that became pretty clear that, okay, what can I do during this time? I can work on some video game stuff. I worked on God of War, which was one of the new games coming out pretty soon, but that was like a quick thing. And then I decided I'm going to use this time to help everyone else kind of prepare themselves better to be able to land work, knowing that everything's kind of changed pretty much forever now. And yeah, so I ended up using this time to build a personal branding course specifically for artists on how to build up a personal brand for their business. And yeah, I think that for a lot of people, it's either going to be, they're going to get really good at binging on Netflix, or they're going to try to work the entire time or be lazy, or they're going to look at this as a chance to learn a new skill. And I think that certain people have definitely managed to evolve during this time. But then I got some friends who are like, man, like I'm running out of stuff to watch on Netflix. And it kind of shocks me that they're not utilizing this time as a chance to, as I said it once jokingly, but like go into a cocoon and come out as a beautiful butterfly on the other side. Despite all the bad stuff going on, this is a chance to leverage this time to really transform your skills and create more opportunity when you come out the other end.
And I can tell you are like super passionate about helping artists, helping people make this transition. And you've mentioned it throughout this, but there's at least one artist out there listening right now. Like, and you've caught her ear, and she's having trouble like overcoming that idea of merging like art and commerce. Because like you said, art is art, but there is that crossover you do need to make. What would you say to her?
I think ultimately we're all afraid of selling. And it doesn't matter whether you're an artist, whether even if you're a salesperson, as people are definitely afraid of selling. But the thing is that whenever you're doing anything, like you are selling. Like when you build your portfolio, that's your way of pitching your services and trying to say, here's what I can do for you. And I always say, like, you could be the greatest artist on the planet, but if nobody knows who you are, then how are you going to get the job? So if I always try and dumb things down in a way that would make sense in any other industry. So if it's like you're a commercial artist and someone tells you to paint a house and paint it pink and yellow, you're going to do it. You're not going to argue that, well, I'm an artist and I think I should do it this way. But it's the same thing that, like, with this, that if you were to put all of your money, borrow money, do everything you could to build a pottery store, do something, you're not going to build a store and then just kind of like sit in the corner and not tell anyone and then hope it does well. Like, that's not how you set yourself up for success. So ultimately, you need to believe in yourself and be excited that what you do is great and you want other people to know about it because you're passionate about it and you want to share that passion. And the more that you are excited for that, the more that you're willing to say, hey, everyone, like, here I am. You don't need to be the sleazy, scammy salesperson saying, hey, let me trick you into give me your life savings. But, and that's just it. Like, a lot of people do associate all these weird associations in their head of like what they are and what they aren't. But that doesn't mean that you're not able to be a lot more legitimate and real about what you're doing. I mean, if anything, if you believe the work that you do is great and you want to have the opportunity to work on great things and work with great people, then you're doing yourself a disservice by not getting out there and not trying to connect the dots and let people know who you are and that you're available. So that way they can acquire your services or acquire your knowledge or acquire your products, whatever it is that you're holding back by not letting them know about it.
Very well said. Very well said. And I'm sure she'll appreciate it. So, I mean, I've loved this conversation, Ellen. It's been a lot of fun. I do want to wrap up on one final question, if I could. So for the last 5 years or 6 years, whatever it's been, I've been doing this and hundreds of interviews I've talked to. I've realized this thing about us as entrepreneurs, as sort of dreamers, that there seems to be this gap that we live in, which means when you started out decades ago, you had this idea of success in your head and you've surpassed it numerous times. But each time you do that, you still never quite see ourselves as successful, right? When you stand on that next stage or when you hit that next $1 million launch, whatever it happens to be, that's when you'll see yourself as successful. Yet you and I both know right before you do that, it's just going to be a bigger goal into the future. I agree we need those and that's what pushes us forward. But rather than doing that for the next couple of minutes, if you could just stop and turn around and look behind you at like this entire journey that you've been through, the highs, lows, wins, and losses. And just tell me, how do you feel about all of it up until today?
Oh man, it's a deep question. I agree. I think that all entrepreneurs, they kind of, when you're in the trenches, like I said before we started, like I've had $100,000 days, I've had like a lot of success with launches and other things I'm doing. And I love it when you're in the middle of doing it. And I think that when you're finished, you're kind of like, what's next? And my big goal, just to make this into a long-winded conversation, but like my big goal when I was 14, kind of set that goal of I want to work in Hollywood was very specific. I want to work in feature film, Hollywood, supervising on set, blah, 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 blah. And then when I actually did all that, then I went into like this big depression of like, well, what now? Because I've had this burning thing for 7 years that has been kind of defining who I am and the direction I'm going. And I think that finally hitting it, it kind of made me lost. And I've had that multiple times in my life where you achieve the big vision goal that you set out for yourself. And then instead of feeling fulfilled, you kind of end up feeling pretty much like, okay, now I have no purpose in life. And it's so stupid, but it kind of is this reoccurring thing. And I think that the secret is to set unattainable goals, because I think the problem is that a lot of us, and this isn't quite answering your question, but I think that a lot of us do set these goals that are attainable because we're afraid of thinking too big. And so we end up aiming small because we think that that's more realistic. And that, I think, is the big problem. Whereas if we set these ultra high goals that almost aren't realistic, but it's more of a general direction, it means that we're probably going to overshoot what we could have ever done by pushing ourselves to go for bigger things in the first place. And it means that maybe you're not going to get that depression because you're getting all these wins on the way and you're feeling good about it, but you're never going to get to the end and then kind of be like, okay, now what? So I think having those goals and those milestones along the way, it's kind of a good way to kind of be always chasing the rabbit. I say all that just because looking back at my career, I've been very fortunate about it all. But at the same time, like I said, whenever you do kind of hit those big markers, like for me, it's just like, okay, well, what the hell do I do now? And so I think it's kind of ebbs and flows. There's the happy and then there's the depression. And it's not the kind of most positive thing to say, but like, I think that it is pretty common with all of us that we crush our goals, but then we kind of get lost for a bit and then we get inspired again and we go after it. So, you know, I don't look back and be like, oh, I feel so fulfilled. I kind of look back and feel so depressed, but just being completely honest. But I think it is, it's more about the journey on the way rather than kind of getting to the big goal. It's more about like feeling that momentum along the way is like what makes me excited and get up every day and kind of keep chasing things rather than getting to the big thing. It's more about making sure that I'm having positive progress rather than negative, like going forwards, not backwards. And as long as you have that, then you kind of keep feeling inspired to kind of keep making progress and kind of see where you end up.
I love it. I love it. Very, very well said, man. So we've talked about what you do to help artists sort of throughout this conversation and what you've been focusing on, possibly this branding course. But now could you, since you have the ear of some artists out there, could you specifically tell them what you're offering and where they can find more out about you?
Sure. I'd say just go to my website, almakay.com, and you can find my YouTube and Instagram. Like that's where all my free content is. I think that's probably better to start there. And then if something resonates, you can look for other stuff beyond that. But yeah, I mean, you know, get on my email list, all that stuff there too. But yeah, I've got plenty of free content. And like I said, a lot of it is more business focused. And the funny thing is that because marketing and branding and all these other things, like it's pretty universal. So whether you are an artist or whether you're an entrepreneur, whether you're in other areas, like I think it all kind of resonates pretty effectively. So feel free to go there and hopefully get inspired.
Nice. So Instagram is your social media of choice?
Yeah, I think that for me, it's just more, I think having two levers. So Instagram, I think works really well for smaller content. And then YouTube, I find is more where a lot of people follow me for more the business side of things and everything. So I feel like Instagram's more of a distraction and then YouTube's more for traction. I'm going to coin phrase that. I just made it up, but that'll do. But yeah, like long form content for me is YouTube and then Instagram is more for short form and then you kind of ripple out from there.
I love it. I love it. AlanMakay.com is the website. Alan's YouTube and Instagram. You can probably just Google Alan McKay's YouTube or Instagram, but I'll also find links to that in the show notes and maybe some specific videos and we'll link to it in the show notes on Hack the Entrepreneur for you. So when you're done walking, jogging, working out, whatever it is you're doing at this very moment, it will be there waiting for you, easy to find. But make sure you track Alan down and see what he's up to. Alan, once again, man, thanks so much for stopping by. I truly appreciate it. Thanks for sharing so openly and just keep doing what you're doing, man, because it is awesome and inspiring to watch.
I appreciate it, man. It's been fun. Thanks so much.
My pleasure. All right. That was a lot of fun. I hope you did enjoy that nearly as much as I enjoyed being part of that conversation with Alan. And I hope that you used what he said and used his story to be, as he says, inspired rather than intimidated. And the intimidation factor does come into a lot of things, but you can just keep that in the back of your mind. Like, are you inspired or intimidated by this situation, by this goal, by this thing that you're trying to achieve or accomplish? Just have Alan's voice in the back of your head. And remember, you can go from intimidated and just sort of mentally shift over to inspired and then take action. It's his story is one of those ones that we love to hear. I mean, moving from an island country of Australia all the way to Hollywood and getting to do exactly what he wanted to do with his life is quite, well, you can say, inspiring. So alanmakay.com, it's his website. Go check him out over there. And you can head over and see the show notes. We'll have it over on hacktheentrepreneur.com for you. So you can easily check it out and we'll get some links in there as well. All right. As I said, this is the second last episode of 2020. And then we can just say goodbye to this year and we can head into 2021. And hopefully the world will just become a better place, a place like it used to be back in 2019 or even early 2020. But one more episode next week, and I hope you'll come back. So please, until then, keep hacking the entrepreneur.